All right, Mavis will take us there. Where do you want to take us? Open lines. For the next 2 hours, you, me, and the telephone. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me into your homes once again. You know, I think we've all had enough of January and this deep freeze, or it's crazy weather everywhere, no matter how you cut it. If it's if you're in California or the Southwest, you're dealing with a drought. If you're in Atlanta, you've got snow. Time to put away the ice scraper. But thank your lucky stars, you're not living on a brown dwarf planet that astronomers are calling Lumen 16b. Great story here, which you can read on the In the News section at coasttocoastam.com. And they've actually come up with a weather map for this star. It's called a brown dwarf. And get this. This is a world. You don't have to worry about the sleet. You don't have to worry about the snow. You don't have to worry about the drought. This is a world where it rains molten iron. The research, reported in separate studies in Nature and Astrophysical Journal Letters, has provided astronomers with the clearest view yet of the complicated atmospheric process occurring in these strange worlds. A brown dwarf is a low-temperature star that has failed to accumulate enough mass to reach the core temperatures and pressures needed to ignite. Some astronomers suggest brown dwarfs bridge the gap between the largest planets and the smallest stars. The astronomers used the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope. I love the name of that. They just call it what it is. Very Large Telescope in Chile to directly map out lighter and darker patches on the surface of a brown dwarf known as Lumen 16b. And it's just a mere skip and a hop away, 6.5 light years. But it rains molten iron. So that'll be the last time I complain about the ice and the snow. Richard Serrett in for George Norrie here on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines are next. And welcome back. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie here on Coast to Coast AM. And let's kick off our open lines with Dennis on the wild card line in Philadelphia. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm I was reading recently, particularly over there in Detroit with the gas shutoffs of out-of-work people, poor people.
Terrible situation in Detroit. Terrible.
Oh, horrible, horrible. I mean, there's so many abandoned homes that they're literally homes or streets or neighborhoods are being razed and practically becoming farmland. There's so many abandoned homes being knocked down. But what amazes me is that over 100,000 people had their gas shut off. And meanwhile, DTE, which is the company, one of the energy companies out there, is getting millions upon millions of dollars of tax credits, tax exemptions, and a lot of corporate welfare. Meanwhile, so I'm sitting here and I'm listening to this, I'm reading about this, and I'm saying to myself, here in Philadelphia, you know, which is the same situation, property taxes have gone up sometimes up to 100%, but a lot of times up to 200% on the homeowners here. And meanwhile, in the business part of the city, Center City, property taxes the office buildings were given a 20% tax cut. Meanwhile, on the poor people, working class people, they've gone over up to 100 to 200%.
Unbelievable! And they're cutting off gas. I mean, how can anyone with a conscience justify shutting off gas in this weather?
Well, a 93-year-old World War II veteran was recently found frozen to death in his house. But here's the question that I'm asking myself, and I would like to ask you and the listening audience how they feel about this. Comcast here in Philadelphia, there was an office tower that was built in 2005, which was built with the taxpayers' money. Over $47 million was given, not only in building the building, but in tax write-offs, business tax credits, and exemptions for 10 years. Now they're going to build them another tower with over $40 million with the same tax credit exemptions to build them another tower with the taxpayers' money. Along with the stadiums here, almost $1 billion it cost to build two stadiums. Over half of it, $564 million, was built with taxpayers' money. So here's the question that I'm asking myself. Since, you know, corporate, there's all this corporate welfare, especially with the Walmart, with the Waltons and bricks and mortar subsidies, we have built them with our tax dollars over $1 billion worth of their own stores. We're taking care of billionaires. So here's the question. I'm saying to myself, when you invest your money in a business, that makes you part owner of the business and you get a share of the profits. Well, isn't this basically the same thing? If we're going to be using our tax dollars to take care of a bunch of millionaires and billionaires, doesn't that make us part owner of the businesses that they're opening up with our tax dollars?
That's an excellent point. Yes. Where are our stocks in Walmart? Absolutely. A great point. I don't like to frame these issues in terms of class warfare because I really fear that that's where we're going. I mean, yes, there is a war on the middle class, and the middle class has been absolutely devastated. But we hear a lot about, you know, a lot of talk about the 1% versus the rest of us. And I really have problems with framing the issue that way. And the other thing that happens is people tend to blame a free enterprise or capitalism. And that's not what's going on. This is not the free market at work. This is, I think, and you alluded to it, these are perfect examples of corporate nepotism, which is it's the antithesis of the free market system. So,
well, what we have here, really, in all actuality, Richard, what we have here is that we have a big business really holding various cities and states and people hostage because they say, well, if you don't do this and you don't give us this, then we are going to leave, and we're going to leave your cities and states with the loss of a tax base. So therefore, you do this for us, and we'll stay, which is cheap wages, part-time work. Meanwhile, all of these jobs that people claim that business is creating really is hurting the cities more because all of their employees qualify for welfare.
Yeah, no question that it's time for the CEOs, to man up or woman up, if you will, in these types of circumstances. You began the conversation talking about Detroit, and one of my greatest fears is that Detroit is essentially a microcosm for what's going to sweep across, you know, the rest of the United States, and perhaps, you know, Canada is not necessarily immune to that. I look at, you know, governments, whatever the jurisdiction, you know, there's a similar situation in Stockton, California, insolvent. Pensioners are basically looking at getting 16 cents on the dollar. But that's our future if we keep going down this road. Our future is Detroit. Look at Detroit as the model.
Well, you know what our truth – no, to tell you the truth, what I think our future is going to be is one of these days – I don't know if it's going to happen in my lifetime, but what our future is going to be is another Ukraine.
Yeah, we're not immune to that kind of strife and civil unrest. And if we think we are, we're kidding ourselves, and we're in for a rude awakening. Great to hear from you, Dennis, in Philadelphia.
Thank you.
Let's say hello to Richard in the great state of Mississippi. Hello, Richard. Good morning.
Hey there. How you doing?
I'm very well, thanks.
I live here in the Mississippi Delta, and I work at the Delta Blues Museum. So I'm constantly getting to meet people from all over the world and all over the country, and I've got people coming in from Chicago just saying how much colder it is there in the Delta, and it's just crazy. I'm just wondering how much of this can we attribute to the geoengineering, if you've heard anything lately about that, because they're really bombarding us here. It's crazy.
You're witnessing a lot of chemtrails down in the Delta, are you?
All the time, especially the past year, maybe two. It's just ridiculous how much. I mean, we have so much farmland and cotton and everything, so you know, that might be part of it, but wow.
I'm no meteorologist, and I don't play one on the radio either. You know, I don't fully understand the complexity of these polar vortexes. I understand polar vortexes have been around forever, and I know for a while, in fact, I think it was a cover of Time magazine blaming the polar vortex on global warming, but then I went back in the archives and I found a Time magazine issue from 1974. It actually referenced polar vortexes and it blamed polar vortexes on global cooling. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. As for the geoengineering, listen, you know, there was several years ago, a bunch of scientists down in Southern California, and they were talking about at some point in the future, you know, we will need to geoengineer. We will need to dump, you know, millions of tons of aluminum particulates into the atmosphere to, I guess, forestall the inevitable global warming, what have you. And whenever I see a conference like that and listen to these people, I always say to myself, well, if they're talking about it now, I'm pretty well baking it into the equation that they're already doing it. They're already doing it. So I certainly believe that they're dumping these particulates into the air, aluminum, barium, strontium. The question is, I mean, are they in fact, is this a last-ditch effort to try and forestall global warming, or is there something far more nefarious is going on?
What do you think about the theory that there's actually no real weather anymore and they're actually having to create all of it?
Who was the gentleman who was recently on Coast? Was it Scott Stevens, who was a weatherman from Pocatello, Idaho? And he could no longer do the weather and look into the camera and tell his viewers about the weather with a straight face, because he said it hit him that it's not just some of the weather that's being manufactured, it's all of the weather.
Yeah.
So when you got somebody like that coming up and telling you that this is what's going on, you stand up and take notice.
Yes, this year I've got a 5-year-old son, and I hope we're not going towards Venus syndrome or something like that, you know.
Well, Richard, you know, just stay healthy, maintain a good diet. You know, if you can, grow your own
too
food.
Hard when they're spraying, huh?
Well, there are some great websites out there dedicated to, you know, how to defend yourself against chemtrails and geoengineering and so forth. And a lot of it starts with a good, healthy diet. If you can, grow your own vegetables. The main thing is, you know, we've got to stay fit. We could be looking at some heavy lifting in the days ahead. So, you know, the best thing is you got to stay strong, for not only for yourself, but for your family. Richard, a great, great call from Mississippi. Thank you. Let's say hello to Jeff in Las Vegas, Nevada. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. I live out here in Las Vegas, Nevada. Just moved out here. And I'm a security officer. I'm out where you can see the mountains. It's clear as day. And I saw something that I have never seen. I'm a very big aviation type person. I know what a B-52 looks like, you know, and such and such. I saw a craft a couple nights ago that just blew my mind. It was... basically, it had propellers, it looked like, in the center of the wing of the aircraft. It was shaped triangularly, and it had lights at each point of its triangle. I'm thinking maybe it was military, but it was just very odd, friggin' aircraft. Where I work at, it's near Area 51. And I'm just thinking, you know, with the technology that we have accumulated in the last decade or two, there's got to be someone helping us that's a lot smarter than us humans. And I just wanted to get your thought on that.
Well, I appreciate the call, first of all, and I'm always fascinated to hear about these sightings and the description. It certainly doesn't sound like it's E.T. It sounds to me like it was made in the good old USA, and I always, you know, I have the immortal words of Ben Rich echoing in my ear that we have things out there in the desert in hangars that are 50 years beyond your wildest imagination. So what you just described sort of fits into that category. What do you think? Made in the USA?
I'm thinking yes, but where do people? I mean, I know we have very intelligent humans, but I mean, where do they come up with the idea on some of these aircrafts and I mean, just in general?
I met a couple of gentlemen up in these here parts. At a municipal airport, and they were members of the Roadrunners, which the Roadrunners are people who have been affiliated with Area 51, or in this case, they were sort of honorary members. They wouldn't tell me, couldn't tell me, weren't cleared to tell me that they worked at Area 51, but it was kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge type of thing. And they told me that the whole UFO story was created by the military as a cover. They said, because what's going on inside Area 51 is, again, you know, we're talking about Ben Rich from Skunk Works and what they have being, you know, 50 years beyond your wild imagination. And if you've seen it on Star Wars and Star Trek, we've been there, done that, decided it wasn't worth the effort. They're saying that's what is going on in Area 51. It's entirely, you know, man-made. There are no alien bodies. There's no back engineering of crashed UFO technology or alien technology.
Us humans have to be very naive to think that we're the only creatures on other planets. And if there are other people or other creatures on other planets, they've got to be as smart or smarter than us.
One would hope. Otherwise, we're all in trouble if they're not smarter than us. Listen, great call from Las Vegas. Jeff, I appreciate hearing from you. We'll get back to open lines. We've got time for one more call here. Let's squeeze in, who do we have? Another Richard. Richard from California. Good morning, Richard. Richard, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi there. Go ahead. You're on Coast to Coast. Okay, we lost Richard. Let's say hello to Tony in Kansas. Good morning, Tony.
And good morning, Coast to Coast. I just heard you talking about these geoengineering and these chemtrails that they're laying. I'm glad that more people are talking about them, because I live here in the Midwest, and I've been witnessing them and seeing them laying these chemtrails, and I've been researching it and trying to tell people about it. And just so many people just can't believe that anybody or the government would be allowing something like that to be going on. But if you research it, you see it. I saw this YouTube video where President John F. Kennedy was giving a speech before the United Nations, and he was talking about that in that speech where we would go to the moon by the end of the decade. By the end of the decade, we'd have satellites orbiting the Earth, connecting us within minutes of telecommunications. That's happened. And then at the end of the speech, he says, we will predict the weather and we will control the weather. So Kennedy knew way back then that the technology existed for them to control the weather.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what they're doing.
Well, the Defense Department in the U.S. released a white paper some years ago called Owning the Weather by 2021, and it would appear they are ahead of schedule. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie here on Coast to Coast AM. More open lines on the other side. Don't go away. Hey, welcome back. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. Thank you for your voices. Great to hear from California and Florida and Missouri and South Carolina. If you've got a line, hold on to it. We'll continue with our open lines. All right, we'll get to Jonathan in Florida, Vinny in California, Julio in California, Michael in Missouri, and John in South Carolina, coming up on Open Lines here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett with you, and for George Norrie, Open Lines. And let's see, where will we go next? Let's say hello to, is it Vinny in California? Hello, Vinny.
Yes, sir, it sure is, Richard.
Good morning and welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. I'd like to make a comment, but rather really quickly and briefly here, with regards to your previous caller, how he mentioned that how he suspects the U.S. government or Department of Defense, U.S. Department of Defense may be trying to manipulate the weather.
Okay. If it in fact is the military, it could be some partnership, private enterprise, combined with some military. There could be a military element to it, but I suspect it could be, if we're talking about weather modification and so forth, it could be, who knows, some corporation.
That is correct. You're exactly correct. Yes. I have an article dated here, October 10th, 2002, This article says here, toxic tests performed in secret. Pentagon tells of chemical biological weapons tests done in six states in the 1960s and early 70s, which thousands of civilians in Alaska, California, Florida, Hawaii, Maryland, and Utah were exposed. This stuff was apparently chemical agents were placed in the skies. So, yeah, I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. There's definitely a paper trail there. We know that we've had the capability of seeding clouds and manipulating the weather going back to the early days in the Vietnam War, when the United States Air Force would seed these clouds because they wanted it to rain down on the Ho Chi Minh Trail and just create a sort of a giant mud bowl and make the transport of weapons and personnel for the Viet Cong more difficult. So, you know, we're going back 40, 50 years. What are they capable of doing now? Who knows?
Yeah, apparently it says here that some tests used the military's deadliest nerve agent, VX, at the time, called V as in Victor, X as in Zing. Yeah.
All right, Vinny, I appreciate the call. Let's say hello to another wild. We're giving the wild card lines a good workout here tonight. Michael is in Missouri. Welcome.
Hello, Richard. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Good morning.
Yeah, I applaud the geoengineering people before me. We were talking about the chemtrails. I mean, we're all seeing them. They're everywhere. They're all across the world. I think what I most appreciate in the fans of this show is the fact that they're understanding genetically modified organisms and the need for more organic, local, small-scale farming. And, I mean, yes, the geoengineering is probably drying out California, and there's a reason for that. But if you think about chemtrails and genetically modified products and all this stuff, I mean, aren't we really talking about them controlling whoever them are, controlling our health through food and what we breathe, and the fluoride that's in our water? And then if you're Monsanto and you own Pfizer now, that is a chemical company giving you something to solve a problem that they've created, along with the water and the air and everything, you know, add it all in. I mean, it seems like a really big conspiracy.
It's the old Hegelian dialectic, right? You create the disease in order to offer the cure. And sometimes, you know, you wake up in the morning and you start thinking about these things. And you figure they've got it pretty well locked down. You're right. It's the food we eat, the vaccines that they jab into our skin, the water that we drink. We are, you know, as Alex Jones liked to say, living on a prison planet. It makes you despair, but you can't. You gotta get up and fight another day.
Well, and that's why you have to encourage everybody to grow their own food and to know that where their meat came from, if they're meat eaters, if you're a vegan, just know where your food came from. Grow it yourself. Put a little garden in your backyard. You know what I'm saying?
You got it, my friend. Thank you, Michael, in Missouri. Let's say hello to Jeremy in the great Volunteer State, Tennessee. Jeremy is gone. Let's say hello to, is it John in South Carolina? Are you there, John? Good morning. How are you?
All righty. I got a little experiment I want all your Coast to Coast listeners to try when they get a chance. We just had a snow down here this past weekend, and a friend of mine called me over to his house to hear, saying, you know, he wanted to show me something. So I went over there. He made a snowball, and he took out a lighter, said, watch this. He stuck it under there. It would not melt, and it turned the snowball black. And I said, I'll be darned. So I went home, tried the same thing. So, you know, no, snowball wouldn't melt, but it turned black.
Did it at least reduce in size, or did it stay the same volume?
It did nothing. And we had the chemtrails 3 days before we got the snow. I mean, we getting them just about like everybody else is. And
Did you hold on to that snowball? Did you put it in the?
I made a couple of them. I made a couple of them, yeah, and put them in the freezer. I called the environmental department of state of South Carolina, talked to a man, and you know I mentioned chemtrails, and he said, "What's that?" And I said, "You don't know what chemtrails are?" And he said, "Oh no, I don't." You know, and I said, "Well, it's probably a government or private enterprise laying them out." And he said, well, I never heard of anything like that. You know, but I knew, you know, that was a lost cause.
Wait a minute. You've got snowballs that will not melt.
And you know, here's another kicker. It's all over YouTube. It's not just this state. My son showed me one from Georgia. This lady was trying to melt a snowball. Same thing. And let's face it, the kids eat snow, you know, when they're out there playing. The snow melts and goes in the ground. It goes in the reservoirs and everything else. But if you got snow up there, next, you know, whenever you get a chance, go out and make one, try to melt it.
That's a great experiment. Let's get all our coast-to-coast listeners. If you've got snow in the backyard or in the front yard, make a snowball. See if it'll melt.
And tell them not to get...
And let us know.
You know, too close, because then they'll say, oh, it's just the soot from the flame. No, it's not the soot from the flame. And I brought it into the house because I got a gas stove. I said, well, let's see what a gas burner will do to it. Same thing. It won't melt it, and it turns it black.
Well, if you know any chemists or chemistry professors, even at the high school, take it in and see if they can analyze it and find out what's in those snowballs. This is rather disturbing, to say the least. John in South Carolina, I appreciate the call, and I'd love to hear from more Coast listeners. Do you have a snowball? Have you made a snowball and it won't melt? Let's go to the international line and say hello to Len in Canada. Hello, Len. Welcome.
Yes, hello. Thank you for the opportunity to get on your show. I've been listening to it for years and years, and today is the first time I had an opportunity to get on, and I have a poser, a question to ask you.
All right. Well, congratulations on coming aboard. Good to have you with us, and fire away, Len.
Well, I'd like to tell you there that I'm an experienced aircraft. I've been in the Canadian Air Force for 10 years. I was a crew chief. I had a pilot's license, and I have quite a familiar thing with aircraft. And the thing that bothers me most of all there is that this station for years and years, and it's nobody's bothered to look into or ask the question of whatever happened to the Pentagon 757 wreckage.
Oh, which 757 wreckage? Are we talking about 9/11?
Well, you know, this thing's been bothering me for years. See, I was also an investigator. I was a fraud investigator. And the curious thing about all this thing on the 911 effort is that there is certain things happened, certain anomalies happened that were not explained, at least officially.
There are a lot of loose threads in this sweater. No question about that. And like you, I wondered about the wreckage. You'll recall the early reports from CNN, and this report is still posted on YouTube somewhere. I can't remember the name of the reporter. It'll come to me. And the CNN reporter on the scene saying there is virtually no sign of an airplane crashing into the building here.
Thank you very much.
No sign.
Thank you very much. See, we have a radio station here in where I live in Vancouver, and they're carrying on the story that the 9/11 was as reported. It was the way it was broadcast. And yet I personally know that a 757 has two Rolls-Royce turbofans, RB211 turbofans, 7 feet in diameter. And at the crash site, and I use a crash in quotes, at the crash site of the Pentagon, there's no engines, there's no air, there's no wings, no fuselage, no tail empennage, nothing. And yet, the official reports and that says a 757 was flown into the Pentagon. And I find that impossible.
Well, I look at the hole, the supposed entry point, hole. And you compare that to the width, to the girth of a 757 fuselage, and I'm saying there's no way you're putting that plane in that hole. And
bless
most of the photographs, most of the photographs that came out afterwards was after part of the building had collapsed, so the hole had been enlarged. And
exactly.
Where are the wings? Those wings should have been sitting right there in the front lawn, just been sheared off as that fuselage. You know, I'm not saying I've got this thing figured out. I'm just saying too many loose threads, and we got to start pulling on those loose threads.
Well,
that sweater's going to start to unravel.
I'd like to urge Coast to Coast as a station to begin its own private investigation and begin to ask questions, because I do listen to you very much for many, many years. And I know that at certain times, people come on and they give a half-hour explanation, which is absolutely brilliant. It's very intelligent. But most of the other times, you're looking for strange planets, you're looking for things, chemtrails and stuff like that. I have no time for stuff like that.
Well, you know, it's a full-service show. There are a lot of people, obviously, that are interested in the paranormal and the supernatural. And you know what? I'll tell you something, and I appreciate the call, Len. But as someone who does a weekly broadcast, you would lose your sanity if you talked about political subterfuge and assassinations and false flags. If you had a steady diet of that, even listening to that, you would begin to despair. And sometimes you need something to give you a little hope, whether it's a discussion about alternative energy or alternative medicine, just to cleanse the palate, just so that we can get up the next morning and fight another day. Let's say hello to Nicholas in Texas. Hello, Nicholas. Welcome. Are you there, Nicholas? Nicholas on the wild card line, going once, twice.
Hear me?
There we are. Hey, Nicholas, welcome aboard. You made it.
Hi. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. And how are things in the great Republic of Texas?
Well, we're holding down the fort. Anyway, I wanted to call and bring up a topic real quick I think everyone should be aware of, and that has to do with the salt, the sea salt being harvested from the Pacific waters along the West Coast.
All right, who's doing the harvesting, and why is that problematic?
Well, there's a few companies. I don't want to name any names, but my biggest concern is there's a lot of health food products that use sea salt, and we've been hearing about animals dying, starfish melting, and seals getting sick from something. You know, scientists don't seem to want to admit one way or the other whether it's being caused from the Fukushima disaster. But the thing about it is sea salt is a distilled down version of seawater. And if that seawater harbors any cesium, strontium, or plutonium, which of course that MOX fuel over there has a high percentage of plutonium in it, it's going to concentrate it into the sea salt. And if people are eating health foods that they think are healthy for them, but they have sea salt on them that's coming from the Pacific Ocean, especially the West Coast, that could be really dangerous.
Is it labeled as such? Does it say on the label, if you buy sea salt, that this is from the Pacific?
Usually doesn't. No, it just says sea salt. So I urge people, if you're eating any type of health food product containing sea salt, call the companies and ask them. And if they're using Pacific salt, if they admit to it, we've got to urge them to change their salt source.
Great call. Great advice as well. That's something I hadn't even considered. Maybe next time I'll just say pass the iodine. Never mind the salt and the pepper. This is not a trite issue. This is serious stuff. But my word. This is the great thing about coast-to-coast callers. They're just taking us places that we really need to go, and we need to start thinking about these things. We've got time for a couple of callers here. Let's say hello to Amanda on the wild card line from Colorado. Hello, Amanda.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was actually calling because I wanted to let you guys know that I have passed through 5 states today, and I've tried the experiment with all the snow that I've encountered in each state, and the same exact thing happened. There was no condensation coming out from the snowball. It wouldn't drip any kind of water, and it turned absolutely black from the flames.
And so this snow is not melting.
It's not melting,
even when you put a lighter to it.
Right.
What did you do with the snowballs?
I just threw it out the window. I'm driving through the state, so I was like, oh, my gosh, I got to try this, because I saw it on YouTube on Wednesday, and I was in Kansas City at the time, and it snowed there just yesterday, so I tried it, and it was crazy because it did the same thing in Nebraska, did the same thing. And I'm in Colorado now, and I was at the gas station, and it did the same exact thing.
And so five states you've sampled. This is kind of a nice scientific sample. It's a small sample, but you've traveled through five states, made snowballs in each state. None of them will melt.
Right.
What?
And as I'm driving down on the highway, actually, the snow isn't even sticking to my car. It's not sticking to the highway. It's just a big old dust storm.
What is going to happen to the snow if there's no, you know, spring melt? What's going to happen to the snow? How are they going to, if they clear it off the roads, if they bring in the plows, where are they going to put it?
I have no idea, honestly.
All right.
It kind of really worries me.
Yeah, I can see why. I think we should all be worried, Amanda.
Definitely.
Well, thanks for the update. Thank you for that. Let's say hello to Kevin, east of the Rockies, South Carolina. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, good morning.
Morning. Yeah, I just wanted to, I just 10 minutes ago tried the lighter under the ice, and it does not melt, and it turns just as black as it can be. You hold the lighter under it for several minutes, and you can't even feel in the ice where the lighter was at. It's still just smooth and even.
And how does it, is it, does it feel cold to the touch like normal snow would?
Yeah, we mostly got ice down here, and I just had some chunks in the back of my truck. So I heard about this actually earlier tonight, so I stopped, bought a lighter to try it. And, yeah, it doesn't melt. It stays level, and it turns, the whole area turns black.
All right, you got to start collecting these samples. We've got to do something. Let me give you all an assignment. You know, if you can connect with someone at the high school or a college, a chemistry professor, get these samples, get them labeled, put them in some sort of a sandwich bag, and get them over to this lab, wherever that may be, and get these things tested. What the heck is in these snowballs? Back with more of Open Lines here on Coast to Coast AM. Richard Serrett in for George Norrie. Stay with us.